People thought Walt Disney was crazy, but he was passionate about that idea. And all of these people, if you look at the greatest people, the most wealthy people, every single time they'll talk about that they're passionate about what they did.
You're a working professional, but struggling to balance the workload of your career, family, obligations, and preparing for your financial future? If so, this podcast is for you. You've spent years learning your craft, and now it's time to focus on your financial future. This podcast will teach you what you need to retire wealthy and happy. Let's dive in.
Would you like to know how to minimize your risk and maximize your investment returns? In this episode, we get to learn from Gary Davidson, who's been a real estate attorney for over 20 years.
Welcome to the Retire Wealthy and Happy podcast. We created this podcast to provide financial tips and tricks to build your passive income and also methods to help you protect your wealth so that you can plan for a better future for yourself and your family. We're grateful to have this podcast sponsored by Monument Real Estate Capital. It specializes in helping people retire 10 years early through real estate investments.
On today's episode, we're excited to have Gary Davidson with us. A brief background on Gary. He's been the owner of Castle Law since 2003. This is a law firm that's based in the Chicago area. Gary is married with two children. He loves to spend time on community projects, and he loves playing golf. On today's episode, we're going to cover why you need a real estate attorney and other things you can do to minimize your risk when investing. Gary, thanks for being on the show with us today.
Hey, thanks, guys. I enjoyed just spending a couple of minutes with you before we jumped on, and I'm looking forward to taking a deep dive on how people can create that life worth living and legacy worth leaving.
Thank you so much, Gary. Would you be willing to share a little bit more about your background and how Castle Law got started?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a product of a union family. My dad was an assembly line worker at Caddy's Reagan Republican, but my dad was on strike throughout the 80s and my mom was a secretary. First generation going to college. And I realized that having a friend that lived a short Schwinn bicycle ride about 5 miles down the road, his father was a lawyer. And I used to ride my bike over there and he lived on a big lot with a big pool in the backyard and a pond that you could go fishing and basketball courts. And I said, you know what? This is what I want to do. And so being around people that can help motivate you, even at a younger age, really sets your course. And that's how I got on the path to forming Castle Law and helping others by giving people a hand up rather than asking for a handout.
That's awesome. Thanks for sharing. Have you been able to replicate what you saw as a youngster?
Oh, yeah. It's funny because the house that I currently live in, it has that big lake in the backyard with a pontoon boat so I can go out and do some bass fishing, and I put some tiger muskie in there so I can do that. And what's really cool about that is I'm an Eagle Scout, and providing opportunities for other people who are not quite as fortunate to experience that, you can have such a meaningful impact on people by allowing people to experience that. So we have a lot of scout troops that will come from the inner cities and minority communities, and to have them see what hard work, perseverance, and working on things that you can love and pay you well at the same time, so that they can have that same impact on them that was an impact on me personally, to help provide that drive to achieve those things that they might not otherwise have an opportunity to experience.
That's awesome. And in the intro today, we were mentioning that you like community projects. Is the scouting one of the things you do as community projects? Is that what you're referencing?
Yeah, absolutely. My why is I'm a connector. And I believe that through helping others, unconditionally, by the way, you're going to in tenfold help yourself. But it has to be that unconditional help in helping anybody that you make a connection with. It doesn't matter what industry you're in. If you sell hot dogs, if you're a lawyer, if you're into syndication of multifamily, providing things like this, which is just value-add content so that somebody can pick up one or two nuggets in the 30 minutes we spend together that will help take them to the next level, that's what lights me up and pays me well at the same time.
Well, we appreciate you giving us some of your time so we can bring that value to people. So thank you so much. Can you share a little bit more about what you focus on at Castle Law?
Yeah, so Castle Law is, we are the largest real estate investment law firm in the state of Illinois by transaction volume. represent a lot of hedge funds, private equity groups, family offices, and a very large majority of the investors in the Chicagoland area. I've been very fortunate, got a couple of politicians that work for me, guy that ran for governor in the state of Illinois, as well as a Senate minority leader in Illinois that works for me. So we represent a lot of governmental entities, represent companies all the way from ExxonMobil down to just regular people who are buying their first investment property. So we do a lot of state planning, commercial litigation, land use zoning, real estate, a little broad brush of anything that we would categorize as transactional or business law to help small individual families all the way up to the large hedge funds in realizing whatever it is that their goal is, whether it's hitting a specific cap rate or just simply getting one rental property so that they can begin to have that residual income, that passive income, so that they can achieve that life worth living, that legacy worth leaving, that career worth having, and the business worth owning.
I love it, Gary.
I'm sitting here laughing, though, Gary, because you're talking about the story about being a young kid and seeing somebody that had a much better life than what you were raised with. And we've got Ben sitting right here. He tells the story quite often about how he served a 2-year church mission down in Rancho Santa Fe, down in San Diego, one of the wealthiest areas in California, I think, and got to see firsthand how the other side lived, so to speak. And he came back and he said, everybody down there was involved in real estate, and that's what I'm going to spend my life doing. And that's why Ben's here today, the same exact thing, just watching other people and saying, there's got to be a better way to do this.
Well, it's interesting, right, to see where we get our influences from. Because now, Gary, you're talking about being influenced for other people, and that's awesome. Can you tell us a little bit more about how Castle Law is structured? From my research, it sounds like it's more like a franchise, or you explain it, if you will.
Yeah, so I graduated from Northern Illinois University Law School, which I think is probably bottom 25% of law schools in the country. I don't have a degree from Harvard. I don't have a degree from Yale. But what I do is I surround myself with people who are at a higher level than me. And the subdivision I live in, I live with a lot of physicians. In fact, I'm the only lawyer in the subdivision. And the only reason I have an exemption is because I'm a real estate lawyer. And so the doctors who are my friends like to tease me that they've allowed me in because I'm not a tort lawyer. I'm not a personal injury lawyer. But what I found is that there's a large trend nationally, and you can say whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, but it's a reality, which is all of your physician offices, all your veterinary clinics, all of your dental practices, all of your professional services are beginning to roll up to private equity. And if you have to think about it, your average law firm, which I like to jokingly refer to as Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe, is made up of 1 to 4 attorneys. And the entire legal community in the United States is one of the most fractured industries in the United States. You have certainly big mega firms, but the reality is that there is a beginning point and an ending point to law firms. And what I found is that many of my very close personal friends that went to law school had high divorce rate, high alcoholism rate, high drug addiction, because they found that they opened a business and they soon realized that they owned their own job. They didn't own a business. Because you see, if the lawyer wasn't there lawyering, if he wasn't preparing his legal bills, doing his invoicing, running to Kinko's and getting copying, if he wasn't there conducting the work, then he didn't receive income. And so the idea behind Castle Law is to take the fracturing of the legal industry, and we provide all of that back office, because lawyers are terrible business owners. Doctors are terrible business owners. They hang a shingle because that's how they sell their stock and trade, but they're not necessarily entrepreneurs. So when I go to lawyers and say, how would you like it if I provided all your marketing to you? I did your billing. I did your invoicing. I did your client services, your development, your retention, all of those things. And all you had to do was lawyer. Because you see, the average lawyer in the United States, 60% of their time is spent on non-revenue generating activities. Well, if you spend 60% of your time on non-revenue generating activities, that means that you have to, by definition, work 15 to 16 hours a day. Now, backing into your answer, if you have to work 15 or 16 hours a day, how successful is your marriage going to be? How fulfilling is your life going to be? How gratifying is your job before you start to succumb to the pressures of alcoholism and drug addiction because you can't get out from under this? So my why in creating Castle Law was not so that I could sell this and make $100 million and ride off into the sunset and live in Naples, Florida. My why was truly providing value add to other people and helping them create that life worth living, that legacy worth leaving, that business worth owning. Now, people say, well, Gary, it's really just because you're inherently lazy. You wanted to figure out a way so that you didn't have to work. Well, that may be true. And I certainly look to figure out ways to create efficiencies so that we can have efficient delivery of client services and have a greater satisfaction for both the client and the attorney. But they happen to both be symbiotic. And I'll close this question with this. We have young lawyers. In fact, we had a couple of law clerks start this week. And the average person, when they're in college, when they're thinking about going to medical school, they're going to law school or whatever is, and parents cause this, by the way. I wanted to be a political science major. And my dad's like, what the hell are you going to be a political science major for? You need to be a business major. You can't make any money by being a political science major. So I started out in business school. After the first year, I think I had a 2.1 average. I almost flunked out of college because I hated it. I couldn't even spell microeconomics. And I switched. And the point behind that story is, I don't care what you do. And specifically in real estate in general, because that's what we're talking about, is if you go to law school, if you decide to syndicate multifamily properties, if you don't love it, you can't make money in it. So I don't care who's listening to this. You have to find out what lights you up, and it will pay you well at the same time. Think about some of the greatest franchises. I mean, who would have known that Sam Walton or the guy who created McDonald's, who was sitting back there and flipping hamburgers, that's what he did to start McDonald's, became one of the greatest real estate companies in the United States. But he started by flipping hamburgers. But I guess what? He had passion. People thought Walt Disney was crazy, but he was passionate about that idea. And all of these people, if you look at the greatest people, the most wealthy people, every single time they'll talk about that they're passionate about what they did.
Well, I love your passion as well there, Gary. Obviously, you're very excited, and it sounds like you're building a great business firm to help people out. Are you familiar with the book Cashflow Quadrant by Robert Kiyosaki?
Absolutely.
And in that book, he talks about the self-employed people, and which is basically what a lot of attorneys and doctors end up being, but you're making it so that they can be, they're self-employed, but you're giving them the back-end business side of it to make it much more efficient and hopefully help them create more money and spend less time doing it, right?
Absolutely. And they become part of something bigger when we take on these attorneys. They work less, they make more, and they have an exit strategy because the sum is worth more than the individual parts. So when they become part of Castle Law, and you're going to see Castle Law start moving in other areas of the country, when they become part of Castle Law, when we do sell Castle Law, they're going to be part of that waterfall.
And before we move on, I want to point out, in a lot of our previous episodes, we talk about one of the best things you can do when you're starting out in investing is to invest in yourself. And with your specific scenario here, I'd like to add that when you're building a business, investing in your business is one of the key elements you need to really grow and scale up. And it sounds like you're offering a great solution to help people invest in their business instead of bringing in employees or however they want to do it on their own. They can bring your team in to help them grow much faster.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And I'm just fascinated sitting here listening to your business model. And I can see how this could be really a genius model, so to speak. I've spent a lot of my career, not necessarily working in the law field, but I was a receiver when I got out of college. I've spent as much time in court, I think, as I have out of court. At least it seems that way sometimes. And so I understand, and I've watched a lot of attorneys as they practiced, and that frustration that you talk about, right? I'm married to my job forever and ever. And if you come up with a way that you can divest yourself, that you go to work and work on what you enjoy doing, which is the law, and not having to focus on running a business and an office and making sure your secretary's there on time in the morning or whatever it is that you do. What an incredible franchise opportunity that you've got going, it sounds like.
It really begins with when we bring on other people or when I'm talking to any client, who doesn't want to be wealthy? And how do we define wealth, right? Because wealth is defined more than just by money.
Yeah.
But who doesn't want to wake up one day and becoming a millionaire? But what people fail to consistently consider is that we can't hit a target we can't see, and we have to establish a clear picture, a clear defined goal, and we have to back into that answer with very purposeful, written down goals. So whether it's someone who says, I want to have passive income of $10,000 per month. Why is that important to us? What steps do I need to take? How many people do I need to meet with in the next 60 days? How many investment opportunities do I need to get involved with? How many investments do I need to make? And you have to write all of that out because, again, you have to define what your perfect life looks like. How much will you be making? How will you make it? And it's amazing. We get up every morning and we get in that grind, but we don't really focus on how we're going to get there. It's the number one mistake that I see investors make. I had a couple of gentlemen that came in yesterday and they said, we want to start investing. And it was very, very modest. The guy, he actually was a local union guy. He won the lottery, $1.3 million, paid his 60% taxes or whatever. I mean, we live in the state of Illinois, so that's a whole other subject. We'll do a different podcast on that. But people are leaving our state in droves. But he's down to $444,000 after it's all said and done. And he's like, I want to invest this. And I'm like, okay, well, we need to be very purposeful about this. How much do you want to spin off of this? What do you need to do? How long are you planning on living? How much do you need to do to maintain your lifestyle? People don't think about these things. And having that clear picture with building that consistency and momentum, reading books like The One Thing, focusing on it, those little steps just done consistently, time over time, each little investment builds up into massive results. I just went for my 50th doctor appointment. I turned 50. I hadn't been to the doctor in 10 years. And the doctor said to me, you have high hemoglobin, high triglycerides, high blood pressure. You've got calcium in your arteries and high liver count. And I looked at the doctor. I said, well, you're fired. I said, if my clients were in that bad of shape, they would fire me. And obviously that was a joke. But I didn't wake up one day and have all those symptoms. That was my habit for the last 15 or 20 years because I was focusing on other things. I wasn't focusing on my health. So I'm here preaching to people. And I was thinking about this podcast. I'm like, maybe we should rename this the Hypocrites Show because I'm a hypocrite. I mean, I'm doing all of these other things in my life to succeed, yet I don't even know if I'm going to be alive tomorrow. And how unfair and selfish is that to my wife and children? So now I've regrouped and I'm like, okay, I didn't become 245 pounds at 5'8", which is effectively an Oompa Loompa overnight. So now I need to get down to 190 pounds. So how do I get to 190 pounds? Well, it's little things, time after time, stop drinking Pabst Blue Ribbon, or at least don't drink as much of it, lower the carb content, all of those things. The analogy is, again, we have to be very consistent, purposeful. We need to know what our goal is and back into our plan.
That is very cool. Very, very, very well spoken. I want to switch gears just a little bit. We want to talk a little bit about your law practice itself. When Ben told me you're a real estate attorney and you're from Illinois, I'm pretty sure Illinois, they don't use title companies. They use closing attorneys. Isn't that right?
That's correct. Again, being a blue state with the attorneys, we've got a great union. And I say that tongue in cheek. We have a magnificent union in Illinois. And so the Illinois Supreme Court has said that it is the unauthorized practice law to do real estate closings, to prepare deeds, to conduct escrow services. So for the time being, we run the show in Illinois. And so we represent a lot of investors from all over the country, all over the world. We're one of a handful of states where if you're coming in and you're trying to do real estate in Illinois, you won't be successful unless you have a real estate attorney, because what happens is we protect our own. And if we have somebody coming in here from Utah who's used to closing at a title company and they say, we don't need an attorney, we make sure that we punish you until you succumb and you use an attorney. So it's very common. The interesting thing is, Illinois does have one of the lowest litigation rates. And in all seriousness, the analogy I like to use is an ounce of whatever is worth a pound of cure. And so real estate lawyer services in Illinois are pretty reasonable. Litigation attorneys are expensive. So using an attorney on the front end to make sure the title's clear, buying REO properties, being subject to all sorts of different things. Illinois, we have municipalities with pre-closing inspections and buyers take subject to this, and you have to demolish a house and not even know it because the municipality's got different pre-closing inspections that will require certain repairs to be done, and it can change your numbers by literally hundreds of thousands of dollars. So knowing all of those nuances, city by city, village by village, can avoid that pain of finding out something after the fact.
Ben and I did a closing last year, and the seller was from New York. And I've coached enough students from various cities. The union is strong in Chicago, but it's much, much stronger in New York City. And you don't even look at a piece of paper unless you've got a law degree back there. Anyway, the seller was from New York, and their attorney just was freaking out. He's like, what do you mean you don't have an attorney? He says, good grief, I can't even talk to you guys without an attorney. And we were just laughing about it. We ended up with an attorney, a good friend of ours, that came in and said, all right, I'll read all the documents and I'll get this taken care of for you so that you guys can say that you have an attorney representing you. But it's a different world. And I've seen it a few times before. I know it was eye-opening for Ben and somebody. They're like, I can't understand this. And then the counter to that is every time I close a loan with Fannie or Freddie, they have an attorney that represents all, reads all their documents, make us have an attorney. And when we get done, we pay for our attorney to talk to their attorney. And then we have to pay for both sides of the closing too. So it's an interesting situation. But I know that there are multitude of situations, just like you just covered, where it's incredibly valuable to have somebody there to read your documents, to advise you in the various aspects of the right way to take title to this thing and that kind of thing. Maybe expand a little bit on those types of situations where people really need an attorney.
Yeah, absolutely, Earl. I mean, here's one of the things that I like to tell people is I have malpractice. We have a $25 million policy because we represent some pretty large clients. And if it's just like a regular residential real estate transaction for $200,000, $300,000, $400,000 house, our attorney fee is $600. So what insurance policy could you buy for $400,000 that's $600? If you screw something up, Earl, you have to look in the mirror. If I screw something up, I have malpractice insurance. Now, I hope not to use that, but I'm a human and we can make mistakes. And so we want to have that policy in place so that if we do make a mistake, then our client is protected. We've had all sorts of circumstances where you don't know what you don't know. In Illinois, taxes are prorated in arrears. How are those taxes calculated on a closing statement? Is it based on the most recent tax bill? Is it based on the most recent equalizer or most recent assessment? In Illinois, it probably doesn't surprise you, we have the highest real estate property taxes in the United States. And so someone who's not familiar with how to do a tax calculation, your number can change by hundreds up to tens of thousands of dollars when we get into the big, huge multifamily and commercial properties. So that's just one example of how that needle can be moved. And you wouldn't even know, because you would just presume that the title company is looking at. The title company is just taking figures that's submitted by a seller. Nobody's cross-checking that. The title company just places that on the closing statement. So you don't know if those figures are right. Commercial loans, endorsements. Any loans could have any number of title insurance charges. We don't know what any of those things mean if you're not an attorney. That needle can move by thousands and thousands of dollars. Because in Illinois, title insurance is extremely expensive. The average title insurance bill is $5,000 and $6,000 just for the title expenses in Illinois. My dad just moved back here from Bull Shoals, Arkansas. His entire real estate closing for 100 acres, he took his savings on the lake, and his property taxes were like a couple hundred bucks a year, and his real estate closing costs were $300. When we start dealing with these big numbers, there's an opportunity for a lot of things to shift pretty dramatically. Before I forget, I want to point out something, because I like to poke fun at Illinois a lot, but since you guys mentioned that you're in multifamily syndication, and I know a lot of your viewers are considering trying to invest money in opportunities to provide passive income that's separate and apart from what they might do on a daily basis, I want to just mention to you something that provides you and your people who are listening an inside edge. And this is something that's incredibly unique about Illinois that people don't realize. Right here where I'm sitting in my office in Joliet, Illinois. We have, just to the south of me, maybe 5 miles, the largest inland port in the world. If you go to Beijing, China, they'll have New York, LA, maybe New Orleans on a map. But right where I'm sitting, it's the only place in the continental United States where every major railroad stubs into it, Canadian National, BNSF, and we have the Great Lakes and the Illinois-Michigan Canal and the Mississippi River. It is the only place in the continental United States where you can get one day semi-truck to Minneapolis, LA, New York, or New Orleans. Now, what does that mean? Irrespective of the fact that Illinois may have an anti-business climate that's been created by some of our politicians, irrespective of that, Amazon, all of your major logistics, your trucking companies, where they're putting all the warehousing, right here, right where I'm sitting. What does that mean to both you and to your listeners? Real estate investing in this area, Will County, Joliet, Illinois, or about 50 miles south of Chicago, like Indianapolis. We hear a lot of good things about Indianapolis because of its location. This here, every single big, huge company like CenterPoint and NorthPoint, those are the largest intermodal companies in the world. They're putting up all their warehousing here. And it's because of that. What does that create? It creates jobs. Jobs create housing. So there's a high need for housing. There's not enough housing stock. There's a high need for rental properties. There's a high need for density of a lot of your large national rent-to-own. Redwood is a big company that I represent. They're the largest build-to-rent community in the United States. They're building here. What that means to Ben and Earl and the folks that invest with you is this place is a secret, because this is all really just happening in the last 5 years. It's an inside secret that I'm putting out there right now on your podcast. And I'm being dead serious about that. It is one of the fastest growing areas because of logistics, and it's not going away.
That is very cool. I spent a lot of time analyzing markets and trying to figure out where's the next best place to go and invest. And I've had Chicago on my radar a number of times, and I've been back there and taught some students where we spent 3 or 4 days and tour them around and look for projects and stuff like that. And I've experienced several times exactly what you're talking about. There's just a growth and an energy that's taking place out there. And where else can you go watch the Cubs on a Saturday afternoon? And either all the things that your city has to offer back there, it's really a lot of fun. As far as the law, what kind of things do you see people do that get themselves in trouble when it comes to these real estate transactions? I'm assuming that you're not just a transactional attorney, but that you're helping people with structuring their businesses and all that kind of stuff that usually coincides with real estate law. I'm assuming you're not doing SEC work. Do you do SEC work also in your firm?
My partner, who is the LLM and tax, my partner does all of our SEC work and all the syndication stuff. But yeah, we actually do the SEC work. I personally don't, but we do a lot of that with Ed Jarrett.
So you guys are really a one-stop shop from, hey, we can help you buy your first house to we can go help you buy the Sears Tower downtown or whatever it is that they're calling it now. You guys can help with the whole thing.
We're doing everything because we want the person who's buying the first $75,000 house where they're cash flowing at $200. We want to help them get to the point where they can be in a syndication where they can actually be putting in $300,000-$500,000 to be part of buying what is now known as the Willis Tower. I still refer to it as the Sears Tower as well, but unless it's changed names again, what we all affectionately know is the Sears Tower.
That's very cool. Last week, I was at a baseball game, and a friend of mine who's an attorney, I asked him a couple of questions about a case that I've got going on, and he says, go use artificial intelligence, ChatGPT or whatever it is. And then my other partner and I flew out to Miami Beach. There was a fund conference, got to start a fund, and we were there mostly because we wanted to go motorcycle riding down to Key West afterwards, but we did enjoy the conference. And then while I was there, I had an hour real estate investment club meeting that was held over Zoom. And at all three times, the importance of AI was brought up, and it quite changed the way law is done yet. Everybody said, we think it's going to change, but it's not going to do what we quite think it is, right? You still need people. I joked with somebody, at least for another 6 months, we'll still need us before they start writing all of our contracts or whatever. Is that affecting your business at all? Or you might be just like me and like, I wish I could just avoid this, but I'm assuming that you've got plans in there of how you're going to implement that to make your attorneys more efficient.
We can start running through all of the companies that existed that didn't think that the world was going to change and that the world was going to simply revolve around them. Taxi cab drivers, taxi cab companies, Blockbuster, all of those things. Early, you and I are of the age where maybe we made fun of our parents because they didn't understand how to run a VCR. And now we've become that person, right? We've become that person with my phone. And even before we started this, I was the grumpy old man. I'm yelling over to the young lawyer, get in here. I don't know how to turn this microphone on. And so recognizing that and understanding that the legal profession is definitely as a whole feels immune to all of these things, but LegalZoom exists, Rocket Lawyer exists, and gone is the day when someone calls and if they want to set up a company, we can say to them, well, we have an availability for you to set up your company 3 weeks from Tuesday or 5 weeks from Wednesday. The client, Ben, who's a lot younger than you and I, Ben's like, well, no, I want it today. Not even tomorrow. They want it today. So we have to recognize that and be able to provide those services and educate people on why they can have both, right? We can deliver in a timely, efficient fashion, just like Rocket Lawyer, but we can also make sure that it's tailored for their individual needs so that they just aren't getting a one-size-fits-all and they're going to the suit store and getting a suit that just doesn't really fit them. So that's what Castle Law really is all about, is being very contemporary, and it's something that's completely unique in Illinois and as far as I know elsewhere. And one of the reasons that it's unique, out west, law firms can be sold to non-lawyers. In Illinois and New York, probably about 42 out of 50 states, in order to own a law firm, it has to have 100% ownership interest by a lawyer. So that's why there's so much fracture, because lawyers, they don't know how to run a business and they haven't scaled their business. So I'm getting out in front of this and providing those services. So as things change and as they ease those restrictions and hedge funds and private equity groups can own law firms, I'm going to be the only one that has castle laws all over the place.
You have plans to move to different states as well, Gary?
Yeah, we're going to be moving into other states. The Chicago market's so big that we have a lot of locations still to open up here, right in the Chicagoland market. But Castle Law is a mid-market play. And what I mean by a mid-market play is we're not going to go to LA. We're not going to Minneapolis. We're not going to New York. We're going to go to places like Tulsa, Oklahoma. We're going to go to places like Aurora, Colorado. We're going to go to middle markets because the big cities are overrun with big law firms. We're going to come in as a middle market player, and then we're going to take all the fracture that exists in those 1 to 5 person law firms, and we're going to educate them and give them an exit strategy so that they can actually not end up like every other lawyer, which is we find them slumped over at the desk and we call the mortician. And it's just a fact of life. They're working until you find them slumped over on their desk and they have no exit strategy whatsoever. Most of them aren't working because they love it. They're actually working because they have to, which is terrible, right? I never want to be in a position where I work because I have to work. I want to be in a position where I work because when I get up, I have a why, I have a purpose, I have a passion, and I'm helping other people grow and scale their business.
So we're continuing our conversation here with Gary of Castle Law. This has been a really fun conversation that we've had. Gary, as you can tell, is very passionate about the law and has come up with a very unique business model that looks like it's going to be very successful for him if it hasn't been already. He's already got plans to expand it. So we are really grateful to have Gary.
I want to ask one specific question. Hopefully you have a good story you can share with us about maybe like a horror story of somebody who didn't use your services or didn't use a real estate attorney and how that played out for them. Because the point of this episode is to help people understand why they need a real estate attorney. So do you have any horror stories you'd be willing to share with us that won't get you in trouble?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we had one just about a month ago where it's the attorney's responsibility here in Illinois. I don't know if the title companies are overlooking this or if people have insurance on this, but someone didn't require a survey. And the city of Chicago is an old city. So these lots go back to Mrs. O'Leary's cow. If you haven't ever heard of Mrs. O'Leary's cow, Mrs. O'Leary's cow, she kicked over the candle and the Great Chicago Fire started. At least that's the old wives' tale. And so now, once the city of Chicago burned down a couple of times, people started building bigger houses. And so it's almost a regular occurrence where you have lot 1, 2, and the west half of lot 3, right? And if that legal description says lots 1 and 2 and the house is half on lot 3, then you've bought a half a house, or you may have not bought a house at all. At least in Illinois, and I can only speak to Illinois, you know, the title companies are just placing information on a closing statement and acting as a facilitator for the closing. They don't necessarily have title insurance. They're not necessarily have malpractice insurance. Yeah, they're a title insurer, but if the legal description, right? Because guess what? Title insurance companies are insurance companies. And I don't care if you're in Salt Lake City, New York City, LA, Chicago, New Orleans, what businesses are in the tallest buildings? Insurance companies. Why are insurance companies in the tallest buildings? Because insurance companies are in the business of collecting premiums and not paying claims, right? So if the legal description is lot 1 and 2, and you bought a half a house because the house was partially on the west half of lot 3, the title company is providing insurance on lot 1 and 2 because that's what the legal description said. You don't have a claim. They're not insuring that you own the house. They're insuring that legal description. And so someone who's reviewing the survey, someone who is ensuring that you're actually getting what you paid for and has malpractice insurance to cover that, Those are the small things. And that literally can be the difference between filing bankruptcy and becoming a millionaire. Because again, if you make that mistake, you get to go, do not pass go, do not collect $200, go straight to your master bedroom and look in the biggest mirror. And you know who you have to blame? The guy in the mirror. Again, with real estate lawyers, very minimal cost. And I mean, literally the most minimal cost in the entire transaction. And it's covered by our malpractice insurance policy. Time and time again, I tell people all the time, I don't have these big, beautiful offices. I don't live on that lake that I dreamed of when I was a kid, when I was drinking powdered milk and getting government blocks of cheese because my dad was on strike throughout the 1980s because Caterpillar was fighting the unions in Illinois. And ultimately, Caterpillar's gone out of Illinois now. It moved to Mexico. But I don't live in that big, huge, mega mansion because of the $600 somebody paid me for being their real estate lawyer. I live in the big mansion because people made mistakes and they thought they were smarter than they were. And then once you have a problem, it's just like me with my diet, right? It's real hard to unwind those problems. It's going to take a lot of time and effort. There is no magic pill. I'm not going to wake up tomorrow and be 185 pounds. It's going to be a year, year and a half project, maybe more. Let's hope I don't relapse.
That's a great analogy, Gary. Thank you for sharing those thoughts. And I think a good summary for our listeners is that in general, if you're talking about real estate investing, the state that you're operating in is extremely important that you understand the laws and what is required. Because like obviously in Illinois, having an attorney for certain things is required. In other states, it's not. And the second part of that I'm taking away from it is if you have experience looking at some of this information, maybe you don't need an attorney, but most likely you do need an attorney because you probably don't understand most of what it's saying. And there's definitely benefits to having somebody like Gary or Gary himself, depending on where you're located, to work on your team so that you're not missing anything. And hopefully your wealth is growing instead of going backwards if you do something wrong.
Absolutely. When you're operating in other states and you're doing your multifamily projects, do you ever run into any cities or subdivisions that have no rental restrictions in them?
That have no rental restrictions?
Yeah. So I know in Illinois, and I don't know if this is a thing nationally, subdivisions, homeowners associations have imposed where you can't actually rent the property. And they passed this. It's a national trend that I'm hearing from my build-to-rent communities where either homeowners associations or in some cases cities, they don't want their entire city to become rental because it has a stigma of being negative. One of the things that I want, if you run into that or any of your listeners run into this, is I saw Blackstone and other big, huge hedge funds buying these subdivisions, and the subdivisions would pass a new covenant saying that they don't allow rentals. And then they lost a massive amount of money because their lawyers were all from Harvard and Yale. They didn't have street smarts like me who went to NIU. And I know street law. And so what we did was I converted all of our rentals for my clients in these no rental communities to what we call land sale contracts or contract for deed. Because even in today's United States of America, you cannot prevent two private parties from selling a property. If you or any of your customers or clients or anybody listening to this podcast ever run into one of these no rental communities, or they pass a covenant saying you can't rent your house. They do census tract data now in communities where they only allow certain thresholds. This is going on. It's a national trend. You can convert those to contract for deed, and they cannot prevent you from selling that on contract. So you take your rental rate, you back it in, you do an amortization schedule, and then you tell the government bureaucrat who's trying to regulate your ability to engage in free enterprise that they can take you to court because in the United States, two private citizens can buy and sell real estate.
Well, you're doing a good job demonstrating your expertise here, Gary, because there's many things that could require a similar solution to what you just provided there. And that's the point of having an attorney to help you through that stuff.
Absolutely.
And that's a very creative use of contract for deeds, which for the most part, not favored very well in many states. Texas, I think, has completely outlawed them or won't enforce them. Utah enforces them partially, but that's a very creative use of contract for deeds, and that's really cool. And I appreciate you sharing that with us.
Absolutely.
So what we're going to do, we ask these final four questions of all of our guests, just to get a little off topic, I guess. And so we're going to start with, what's your favorite business book? Do you have a favorite book that you love to read?
Yeah, The Go-Giver. I love that book. I mean, I think it's a theme of what I've been talking to you guys about. It's all about leading with value, and I would highly recommend it. It's called The Go-Giver.
It's a good book.
Thanks, Ben. And what do you think brings you happiness? It's different for everybody, but I could probably predict what you're going to say, but we'll go ahead and give you a chance to answer it.
Yeah, I mean, again, we talked about it here. It's helping others, leading with value, being a connector, focusing on others before you focus on yourself, and doing it in without any expectation of anything in return. Being very genuine, being humble, this is not something that you can just, if you're trying, you're not going to succeed. It's got to come deep within your core, deep within yourself of wanting to help others before you help yourself. Figuring out ways that you can add value to whoever you meet without any expectation of anything in return is going to make you the most successful person.
That is very cool. I agree 100% with that. Tell me, what do you think your retirement looks like? Are you like most of us that think we're never going to retire? We're just going to keep working until we crash at the desk.
Well, what's interesting about what I've put myself in the position with my businesses, and in fact, the ladies in my office actually made one of those milk cartons that said missing person, and it shows a picture of me, because I'm doing what lights me up and pays me well at the same time, which is being out and helping other people. It's not sitting here doing the daily grind. I love helping other people. I love volunteering. I love social opportunities to help nonprofit organizations. So I'm a busybody. I can't sit and watch TV. I can sit and watch TV and then realize I haven't been watching for 15 minutes because I start getting up and pacing. So being actively involved, retirement certainly might mean my goal to sell Castle Law, help other people along the way and all these attorneys, and be involved in other things that light me up. Boy Scouts of America, being involved with fishing, trying to learn how to golf. I've been golfing for 7 years, but I'm getting to the age where a lot of my friends actually are starting to retire, and they say, be careful what you wish for.
Thanks, man. The last question is, what do you think is the best way to give back?
I think the best way to get back is build strong relationships with people and identify what's the one thing such that if you could provide it, everything else that that person was trying to achieve would become easier or unnecessary. Now, people might have heard of that before. That's, of course, Gary Keller and The One Thing. So when you're talking to someone, identify that one thing. What is it that they're trying to do in their business? I asked that question to the two of you at the beginning. What was the one thing that you were looking for to get out of this program, such that if I could provide that value to your listeners, everything that you are trying to achieve in your business was easier or unnecessary? Now, at the time that you asked me that question, you might not have known that I was being very strategic on why I wanted to do that. But the purpose for that was because I truly wanted to provide value to your listeners that would help you in helping those you are trying to help achieve their success.
That is really great. So for the listeners, I mean, you think of attorneys that make $1,000 an hour or more, and we think you talk about the one thing. We got that one thing today from listening to you. And I think our listeners got more than $1,000 worth of value for your valuable time that you've given to us and them today. So we really appreciate the time that you've spent with us. This has been a complete joy, and I've enjoyed every minute of it. And we really appreciate the time that you spent with us and for our listeners.
Thanks, guys. Next time I come out, I'll wear my cowboy hat.
There we go.
Gary, where can our listeners find you online?
www.castlelaw.com, CASTLE law.com.
Thanks, Gary. This is a quick summary for our listeners. On today's episode, we talked about why you need a real estate attorney. Gary gave several good examples of ways that he can help you improve your investing strategies and make better choices so that you can build your wealth. We want to again say thank you to Gary for being on the show. I love his passion that he brings to this conversation, and hopefully you learned something from today's episode. Thanks for joining us on the Retire Wealthy and Happy podcast. We hope to see you next time.
Thanks so much, Gary.
No problem.
Hope you got value from this episode. And if you have a minute, then take the time to leave an honest written review for the podcast, because we take those reviews seriously and it'll help us serve you better on the next episodes. And most importantly, be sure to start taking action so you can control your financial future today.